And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Elaine S. from Escondido.
Hi, everyone. My name is Elaine, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September the 23rd, 2002. And congratulations, Bill, on your 90 days, and welcome home to all the newcomers, people coming back. I found this to be my home. It took me a few tries to get here as well. I came in same year as Sam did in 89. Thank you for inviting me to speak tonight too, Sam. I came in to get some heat off my back. I got myself into a little bit of hot water in 89 and decided, I better get into AA and do this thing. You know, my father-in-law was an alcoholic. He was around the clock drunk. So I did not really think, I did not concede to my innermost self in 89 that I was a true alcoholic. But I cleaned up good. I was drinking way too much. You know, I have a lot of pity parties at home. And, I came into AA just to kind of seek refuge. And my marriage was on the rocks, and I decided that I was going to find my next victim in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a good idea. I was married for 15 years to this man, and we got married really young. I had three kids, my drinking was taking on more serious proportions. And so when I came into AA, I was kind of relieved because I wanted to show you all that I could do this, and I wanted to make sure I got the heat off my back, and I wanted to make sure everybody had an idea that I was this good girl. I wasn't this bad girl that, one night of drinking got me into. So I cleaned up good, and I felt good, and I was, prowling around, but one thing that I didn't do was really work the steps. I found a little old lady that took me through the 12 and 12. That's how I first got introduced to the steps, was through the 12 and 12. And anytime we would read a step, I'd be like, in my head, check, I've got this, I'm done, And then I got to the fourth step, and the way she had me do it was I wrote this story about my life. And it was a really sad story. And I'm going to digress through this because, I found out that by doing the steps, a lot of my character defects, / survival skills, came from a childhood, working my fourth step again now. And, some of the stuff I thought I put to rest, didn't. It's still alive and well within me. But I grew up I'm from New Jersey, and there's a few of us here from New Jersey. Moved out here 5 years ago to be near grandbabies. But I grew up in a home that was, somewhat normal. My father didn't really drink. His father died from this disease. I never met him. I never met my grandfather. Never met him. He died from this disease. And my brother actually is a recovering alcoholic as well. Go figure. But we grew up in this household that was really pleasant for a while. And then around age 10, shifts occurred in my family. My mother went back to work, and things kind of got off kilter. What I found out was my mother was, having an affair outside the marriage. And I was the little girl who had to keep all the secrets. So I learned how to lie. I learned how to people please, all these character defects on an early age. I had a very nervous disposition at a very young age, too. One night, my mother came home, and I was watching TV. I was watching Kreskin. Any of the old-timers here remember Kreskin? I waited all week for that. And when my mother came in that night, she came in a little early, and I knew something. I sensed something was wrong, and I got up to kiss her goodnight, and I could smell alcohol in her breath. And she went upstairs, and she was in the bathroom for a really long time. And, I was knocking on the door. She goes, I'll be right out. And we shared a bedroom at that time because my parents were getting ready to split up. And she was drinking a lot of water. And I'm like, Mommy, what are you doing? She says, I'm just thirsty. Well, what she was doing was she was drinking and taking Valium. She was trying to commit suicide that night. And I'm in the same bed with her. And she was snoring, which was not unusual, but this snore was a little bit more than normal. So I was trying to wake her up, and she wouldn't wake up. And I got my dad, and she was in a coma for three days. And she survived. And the first thing she said to me when she saw me is, why did you do it? So here I am. I'm 10 years old. My mother's trying to check out on me. So I didn't trust anybody, not even my mother at this point. So a lot of my character defects are really, I can really see where they started. I was frightened. I was always trying to be the good girl. I didn't want her to do it again, you know. And then once I found alcohol, all bets were off. You know, my father moved out the next year and took my brother, and it'd be 20 years that I would before I would see my father again, and 15 before I'd see my brother. And I found pot first in eighth grade, and then I started drinking, you know, before school, after school, who could get it, who's got that, you know, whose parents are going to be out of town this weekend. You know, and I look at kids today that are in eighth grade, I'm like, holy crap. You know, I thought I was so mature back then. I was nothing but a child, you know. Oh, my gosh. So, normal kid stuff, partying. I had a horse. We'd always meet at the barns and, you know, rode our horses and got high and drank and partied. And I met this guy who's soon to be my first husband. I was 15, and he was a partier, too. Big partier, just like me. We tend to flock together, right? You know, we always attract the people that drink like us, or at least I did. And, you know, we hung out and had a really good time, and I got pregnant. So I just graduated high school, made my mama proud. I had to go and tell her, yeah, Mom, I'm going to have a baby. So we ended up getting married, and I didn't drink the whole pregnancy, my first pregnancy, and, once the baby was born, I'd start up again, because I'm an alcoholic. What do alcoholics do? They drink. I look for that ease and comfort, white-knuckled it for that whole 9 months, and then I've had, you know, two other children after that, and second one I didn't drink, the third one I did. All three of my kids are, well, two of my kids are in recovery, and one child doesn't drink at all. It's a family disease, you know, and unfortunately, that man, my first husband, Michael, just passed away right before Thanksgiving this year from an alcohol-related death. He was 63 years old. He was drunk one night and hit his head and didn't have it looked after, and then he went to bed and he never woke up. And my children are, you know, devastated, and I'm hoping to God that this is going to be a good lesson for them, that, you know, alcohol kills in more ways than one, you know. So, four and a half years I put together in the program, and then I decided that it was my childhood that made me drink, and it was my ex-husband that made me drink. I stopped going to meetings. My best friend moved away. It was a perfect, Bermuda Triangle or whatever, perfect storm, and I walked away from AA, and next thing you know, I'm off to the races again, and I'm drinking, and I'm doing other things, and I was divorced at this time, by the grace of God, you know, 7.5 years later, I didn't kill anybody. I've gotten in a couple accidents. One night I was coming home from Morristown into Mendham, and the road was slick, and I'm spinning around. I'm like, holy crap, and I slammed into the curb, and I popped both my tires, and I'm trying to drive home. That's how, you know, messed up I was, and then I'm like, oh, I can't drive home, and then I pulled in front of a liquor store, ironically, and left my car until the next day. And my girlfriend, I didn't know how to change a tire, and I only thought I popped one. And I said, I got a flat tire last night. Could you come down with me and help me? She looked at me. She goes, Elaine, were you drunk last night? And I'm like, oh, maybe a little bit, you know. So then I came back into the program. After 7.5 years, I realized, you know what, I can't stop. You know, every day after work, I'd either go to a different liquor store that I'd went, you know, I didn't go to the day before. Every morning I'd wake up and say, dear God, please, please, don't let me drink again today. Please, don't. And I finally found a sponsor. I was scared to death of her. She was like a big book Nazi, and I was afraid of her. And I figured, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I really need to do this. And She took me through the big book. I'd meet at her house every week, and she'd make that book come alive for me. What I wasn't telling her is I was smoking pot. You know, I'm still, you know, I'm not drinking, you know. I knew better, you know. I was So here I am, still lying, still dishonest, still not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, still trying to manage and control my life, still trying to do things on my own power. And finally, I came clean, you know. God shook the truth out of me. And I told, I told my sponsor, you know, and I've been smoking pot. So my first sobriety date was my son's 21st birthday. And of course, I had to go buy him his first drink, second drink, and then I left him and went with a friend to do other things. And that was the night that I came back on his 21st birthday. Actually, it was the next morning. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm laying on the bathroom floor screaming, God, I need you. Please help me. My friend was with me, and she was in the program before, too. And I said, you've got to go back with me. And we went to AA the next day, and I stayed. She didn't, and I'm not sure where she's at today, but I pray for her. So, you know, I get this big book, Gestapo, and I'm going through the work, and I'm in the middle of, I had just finished my fourth step, and she went into some kind of a dark night of the soul type of thing, and stopped sponsoring me, and I was like freaking out and like, oh my God, what do I do? Because, you know, I got all this crap laying out in front of me that I did, and, you know, all these resentments and fears, and I had no idea what to do with them. And then I found another sponsor who was much more loving and kind, and she also helped me. But, you know, I still got to tell you, I was still managing and controlling my sobriety. I was still, you know, kind of picking and choosing different steps, the ones that I liked, the ones I didn't like. And, I moved out here in 5 years ago, in 2014, October 2014, because of grandbabies. I've got three here and two in Colorado. And, when I first moved out here, I'm an alcoholic. I'm thinking nobody will know. You know, my husband's in New York all the time, and whatever, I can do this. And I could probably hide. And, you know, back east, we have liquor stores. We don't sell booze in grocery stores and CVS stores. And I was just like, oh, man, this is like a bingo. This is pretty cool. And I remember being in Costco one day, and it was around the holidays, and there was this big-ass bottle of vodka. And it was calling my name. It scared the living crap out of me. I was, I'm trying to go to meetings. I'm trying to fit in. You know, I'm feeling like I can't fit in with the cliques. I felt like nobody was accepting me. I know it was all about, you know, it was me. It was my fault, really. But at the time, because I was still acting very unrecovered and selfish and self-centered, and it was all about me and, you know, what I wanted, you know. And I knew I needed to do something. I couldn't find any meetings that I liked. And then my little angel, Sam here, I was at a Mike's Barbecue meeting, and he mentioned about this 6:45 a.m. meeting in Escondido. It's a daily reflections meeting that was just getting started. And I thought, my husband wakes up at 5 to work New York hours. I'm up. That sounds like a good deal. And I remember I left the meeting and forgot the flyer, and I went back in and talked to Sam, and I've been there ever since. You know, it's my home group, and I love that meeting. You know, I found a sponsor in Escondido, and I loved her. She's a well-revered woman, and she just sponsored differently than I was used to, you know. I was used to sponsorship where we sat one-on-one, you know, with a table and went to work. And so I started judging because I'm an alcoholic, and that's kind of what I do, right? Yeah, I'm a big judge and juror and everything else, and how dare people do it differently. And, I kind of got to hide out a little bit because I wasn't accountable, really. Yeah. I wasn't accountable. She had a lot of sponsees. We'd meet once a month and, you know, la la, we'd eat dinner and have a good old time. And, that was great until I started feeling really restless, irritable, and discontent. And I was feeling like, holy mackerel, it's coming back. I'm going to drink again. You know, if I don't do something different, I'm going to drink again. Am I talking too fast? I might be talking too fast. Well, I mean, I got to kill some time here. So I'm watching myself around my husband. I'm watching myself around my children. I'm getting really judgmental. I'm getting really, really resentful at people. I'm thinking, I know better. They shouldn't be acting that way, you know? I finally found this woman that was doing these workshops in town. In fact, Steve P., this guy from our home group, was telling me about her, and he was trying to get me to, you know, listen to her. And I was an alternate DCM up north there for a little bit, and he was going out of town, and we were running this workshop, and Helen was going to be the main, was going to do the workshop. And then I heard her, you know, like she presented things so differently, you know, things that I never heard before. She said she overcame her anger, she overcame fear, and I was like, really? How the hell do you do that? You know, I want to sign me up, you know. She outgrew it, is what she said. She outgrew fear, and she outgrew anger. And I was like, I want to sign up for that one, you know. And I would go and go where she was going to meetings and stuff. And I'm like, oh, you know, would you take me through the steps? And she's like, well, I'll pray on that. You know, that's because she really consults higher power for everything. And, you know, I had the sponsor, you know, well hooked up into the community I was in, and I'm a people pleaser, remember? I was that kid who wanted to please everybody. I still did not outgrow that either, you know, and I was afraid to tell her, you know, that I was going to be moving on, you know, but the more I heard what this woman had to say, the more I knew my life depended on doing something a little bit different than what I had been doing before. I've done so many half measures availed me, you know, it was my motto to get a lot of things done and look good, but do everything half-assed. I don't know if any of you can relate to that, but that's the kind of way I ran my life in school and in different areas of my life, you know, and at work. You know, I did enough just to get by. I knew I had that sixth sense when the poop was going to hit the fan at work. I'd run to HR and cry about me being a single mother with three kids and blah, blah, and get out of it. You know, as a good manipulator, I'm sure you can relate to that. You know, I did so many different behaviors that I'm not proud of, and they, you know, and this woman's walking with dignity, and she's showing up with a different way about her. There was a peace and serenity within her that really attracted me to her. So finally, I did ask her, I said, I really want you to be my sponsor. Would you be my sponsor? And again, I'll pray on it. I'll get back to you. So a couple weeks went by, and she said that she would be my sponsor. And, you know, I went and I thanked my sponsor for everything that she gave me and that I was going to be moving on. And I'm so grateful, you know, that God put her in my life because... I know, you know, you hear people with, you know, I got 17 years of sobriety, you know. She said people wear their time like a badge, but here they are running around with resentments all over the place, and that was me. You know, some of the things that precede a relapse, that was me prior to, you know, meeting up with her and looking at my sobriety, you know, and I didn't want to be that person, you know, gossiping and, you know, all kinds of negative behaviors, you know, those are old behaviors that no longer serve me, you know, and I learned, she taught me that I'm driven by a spiritual malady, you know, I have a spiritual malady. My first few go-rounds in AA, that went right over my head, I had no idea. Part of my spiritual malady is the resentments, the fears, the angers. That's part of my spiritual malady. And I was full of it, you know, up until I started working with Helen. And, you know, I started to pray differently. She had me pray and ask God, show me where I'm closed-minded. She had me to pray and ask God to show me what does it mean to be maladjusted to life. Kind of what I was just doing, how I was being. She opened my eyes a little bit to see what, how I was behaving. And I, you know, she asked, like, what's running the show these days? And resentments, fears, whatever. And she goes, do you think that sounds like a recovered alcoholic? And I was like, holy crap, 17 years in, and I'm acting like an unrecovered alcoholic, you know? Scared the living, you know, crap out of me, you know? But it was true. I was acting like an unrecovered alcoholic. I was full of fear. I was full of resentment, full of anger, and I didn't know why. And she explained it to me. I'm an alcoholic. I have a mental obsession, and I'm always going to have a mental obsession. It's never going to go away. And I have to treat it by growing spiritually on a daily basis. And, you know, I thought I had this spiritual thing going on. I really did. You know, I prayed to God every morning. I thought I had it. But it's different this time. I'm actually asking God specific questions. Please, God, show me this. Dear God, show me how I can be helpful. Show me, God, where I'm, like I said, maladjusted to life, where I can better serve someone. It's just been an incredible experience. And at the time when she pointed out that perhaps, you know, I might be unrecovered after 17 years, like some people, 20 years sobriety, they went out. Oh, my God, what happened? Oh, the mental obsession came back. That perfectly reasonable idea to pick up that drink came back, and there they were, off to the races again. And that I was this close. I know I was just this close for doing that, for picking up that drink. You know, so after 17 years of sobriety, I'm powerless over alcohol. I have no power over it. God has all power. My mental obsession has some power, and I have no power over alcohol. So the only way I can treat my alcoholism is by growing spiritually and by taking the steps, you know, and I'm going through, you know, the steps again and at a deeper level. You know, it's so much deeper for me because I'm bringing God into it. What a concept. I don't know if any of you can relate to being a control freak, but I'm not alone. You know, and that's the way I ran my life. You know, I was a control freak, and I wanted to look good. I wanted to sound good. I put on a good front, and everybody thought, oh, Elaine's got herself, you know, she's got her shit together, you know. And inside of me, no, I didn't. I was still a scared little girl, you know, and I'm learning. When I started my four step this time, I bought a 2-inch binder. I'm up to a 3-inch binder and growing, and I'm only on my, I just started my fears, you know. And one of the different things that I'm doing this time too is, you know, the resentments for people. That's the easy one. The second one that I'm working on is the principles. What are some of the principles that she pointed out to me? I'm not good enough. People who love you will leave you. You know, all those things that I kind of been carrying around since I was a kid. You know, it's not psychobabble. It's just that it's the truth. You know, it's the things that I lived. You know, and I really truly believe that, you know, how we're brought up, we bring this stuff to the table. Here I am at 62, you know, still lugging this crap around, you know, and I want to be done with it once and for all. And if Helen can outgrow fear and if she can outgrow resentment and be peaceful and have this relationship with God, I'm on board with it too. And I'm jumping through hoops like I've never jumped through before, and I'm bringing God with me in each and every turn, you know, asking God to show me, help me, show me what I need to be here. How can I be helpful? I'm repeating myself now. But, you know, I needed to tap into this power. It was just, it was lip service. This God thing for me was kind of lip service. It was not going from here to here. It was still a lot of that same old, look over here, the smoke in the mirrors, you know, kind of a thing. But this time, I really am, you know, really reaching to my higher power for the courage and the strength to go forward in this. And God has been showing up for me left and right. And so I started to tell you the story about when I realized I was not acting like a recovered person, I kind of went into this dark night of the soul. My body just, I couldn't get out of bed. Like for 2 days, I was in bed and I was unable to motivate, to go out, to do anything. And, you know, my sponsor told me that happened to her too. And she goes, don't be surprised if it happens again. It was me just realizing that I was powerless, and I finally just surrendered to my powerlessness. And it was kind of freaky, you know? It was kind of freaky because I'm never sick. I never, and it wasn't like I was sick. I was just down for the count. And that was God, you know? And God's showing up for me in so many different ways today that I'm, my relationship with my husband's amazing. I was ready to kick him to the curb, you know, because you're not playing or doing what I want. Yeah, get the heck out of here, because that's my MO, you know? I was the control freak. I'm the one running the show here, kids. And now I'm learning that, you know, I'm not in the driver's seat. I thought I was in the driver's seat. I found out I'm in the trunk, you know? That's my sponsor's line. I can't take credit for it. But, you know, I really did. I truly thought I had it all going on. I had nothing going on. It wasn't until I was wiped clean and I felt like a newcomer again. I truly, and I still do, feel like a newcomer again. And I'm so grateful that I've got this opportunity that, you know, I don't have to pretend I'm somebody I'm not. I mean, this is raw Elaine, you know. It truly is a great gift for me that I was able to find this woman. And do you want to know what? Her name is Helen. My mother's name is Helen. Her birthday is August 1st. My mother's birthday was August 1st. Now, if that's not the hand of God, I don't know what is. You know, it's truly just got the little chills here, you know. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for the teaching that she's you know, been showing me. You know, in this fourth step, you know, looking at these principles and seeing how they've dominated my life for so long. And I just want to be done with it. You know, I want to be done with it. I want God to come in and change me and help me grow into what I was meant to be since I was born, you know. Drugs and alcohol took me, wow, all kinds of different crazy ways. I got into some crazy situations. I went down, my moral curve went like this. And I definitely never want to go back there again. So what do I have to do? You know, I am powerless over alcohol, and my life became unmanageable in and outside of the room, drinking or not drinking. You know, my life was becoming unmanageable in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was not being honest, because I was still in control and I was trying to run the show. And that is not a good place to be. And, you know, I came to believe in a power greater than myself that was going to restore me to sanity. Like I said, I always believed in God. I was brought up Catholic. So I always had these, you know, I had these scary ideas about God, you know, through my priests and, you know, the fire and brimstone kind of thing. I remember that from a kid. So, you know, we sat down one day and my sponsor asked me, what are your ideas about God? And I told her. And she said, well, where'd you get them from? My priest, the nuns, my parents, blah, 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 blah. She goes, well, okay, well, those are conceptions of God. Have you had experiences with God? That's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to plug into the power of God and have experiences with God. So pray for that. Specific prayers. Pray for God, come into my life, help me to have, you know, feel the power. And God started to show up for me in various ways, you know, and it was very powerful. When I look back on my different times in AA, I really sold myself short, you know, by running the show and pretending I was somebody I wasn't, you know. And God was showing me that this time around, knocked me to my knees in bed for 2 days. So I made that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. We sat in her living room, got down on my knees, and I did that. I made that decision, you know. And there were a couple times, a couple weeks after that, where I was still trying to play God, and she would peacefully show me, you know, ask God. You know, it's not you, it's God. You need to ask God what he would have you do. She never tells me what to do. She'll just show a mirror, you know, tell me, you know, what, suggest prayers. She'll go right to that big book. Everything's out of the big book for her. You know, everything's out of the big book. the first 100 people. That whole book is about how those first 100 people recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind, body, and spirit. And that's truly what I wanted to hear. I wanted to learn. And she's showing me that. You know, and this fourth step is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I'm on the fear thing, and I'm sure I'm going to need another 3-inch binder just for that alone, because I'm afraid of so many things, you know. And I can't wait to be free, you know, of the fear and the resentment and the anger. But I recently, my lifestyle changed. I remarried. I forgot that. I always forget to tell the good stuff. I remarried 14 years ago. I did not meet him in AA. I met him years ago at a job. My first job, when I was going through my divorce, he worked at the same company that I did. He was only there for a year. And our paths crossed again. He was married, moved to Boca, got divorced, moved back up, and our paths crossed. And we started seeing each other. And then I was doing a four-step with a sponsor that kind of went on the dark side. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to see you later. I'm going to do my own thing over here. And then we got back together again, and we've been together ever since. He came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, too, said he had a drinking problem. He went to AA, did fourth and fifth step, and then decided he didn't need it anymore. And I had a little bit of a problem with that for a while. And then I decided, you know what, stop looking over the fence. Keep looking at where you're going. Don't look over at what he's doing. Stay the course. So that's what I've done, and each sponsor that I had helped me with that. And so we've been married 14 years, and I have, like I said, I've got a couple kids in recovery and one that doesn't drink at all. And the one that's in recovery, she just got a year in December, and she's got a baby that's about going to be two next month, or next Saturday. And her marriage wasn't working out, and now they moved in with us. So now we have my daughter, a granddaughter, and a dog. My husband's never had children, so it's interesting. He's doing great so far. But, you know, the terrible twos are starting, and, you know, he's accepting, you know. And I'm finding that as I'm changing because of this fourth step, I'm changing already, even though I haven't done my fifth step, because I'm seeing in black and white what a crazy cuckoo bird I am. He's changing, and it's been amazing. It's just really been amazing. So, so that's our newest thing. You know, the kids, the baby's great. She brought a dog with her, too. That one, I don't know. But, you know, I get to practice these things, and I met with my sponsor the other day, and you know, I said, I guess I'm going to have to set some boundaries, a little bit of boundaries here. And she goes, well, it's been my experience that we pray and ask God what he would want us to do here in this situation with the baby and you getting to your meeting. And, you know, like that's what she was insinuating. She didn't go in. And she goes, boundaries is a rehab term. And I was like, oh. She goes, you want to connect with God and ask God, what would he have you do? How would he like have you be of service? You know, and it really made me think about that. You know, I need to connect. I'm making decisions already, you know. I know what I'm going to do here. I'm going to set these boundaries, and I'm going to tell her, you're going to get up at 6 o'clock with this baby. Yeah. She's lucky we get up early so she can go back to sleep. So I'm so grateful because this daughter of mine, my middle child, we didn't get along so well, you know. She was daddy's girl, and, you know, there was a lot of animosity there when I was drinking, and I was not such a great soon-to-be ex-wife, and I said some mean things, and she would always stick up for her dad, and I, you know, gave her a few of my choice words and stuff like that, so we didn't always get along, but guess what now? I get to make a living amends to this daughter of mine, you know, for all the harms that I caused her over the years. And it's amazing how God set the scene for everything that goes on. That's what Helen said. Look to see where God wants you to work. Look to see. Listen. You know, I think I know. you know, I think I know. No, what I'm learning is that I have to plug into my higher power every morning, and I do get up early, sometimes 4:30. I have a prayer chair. I sit. I pray. I ask God to show me what would have me be. All new behavior. Never did that before. Give me a few extra minutes, a shut eye, and I'll be okay. But no, you know that movie Avatar? I feel like that's what I do. You know, I take my thing and I plug into God in the morning, and I feel His power, and I feel like I've got some strength and courage to go on for the day. You know, it's pretty cool. But you know, I thought I was a nice little girl who drank too much. You know, I found out I'm a true alcoholic with a spiritual malady, you know, and drinking was just a symptom of that spiritual malady, and I never got that in all the years I've been around the program, and I guess I just wasn't ready to see it. A lot of times that happens, you know, I don't know how many times, and one of the things that I tried, because, you know, I got to fix myself with me. Back in New Jersey, they have these meetings called moderation management meetings. Do they have them out here? No. You go to meetings to talk about watching how much you drink, and you'd make every day, you know. And if you're a true alcoholic, guess what? Ha! No. I think that lasted for 2 days, and then I was like, screw this. This is not going to work. But, you know, I know what I am today. I know that I have a mental obsession, and that at any given time I could drink if I'm not growing on a spiritual basis. So, I'm just so grateful that I have a life beyond. I mean, I have an amazing life in California. I never thought in a million years I'd move to California. You know, I have a wonderful husband, a lovely home. I got 3 kids that are not drinking. You know, life's not perfect. You know, we've got issues, and I get to learn how to shut my mouth and listen. That's a tough one, especially when your kid's hurting, you know. You want to fix her, I'm learning through sponsorship, you know. Don't say anything unless you're asked. Don't give your opinion unless you're asked. And, you know, these are things that I'm learning since I've been in recovery. You know, I've taken a 4-step before, you know, admitted to God, to another person, and, you know, I always find more. You know, the sponsors always show you a little more than you want to see, which is a good thing. It's a really good thing. And then we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character, and I really thought I did. You know, I really thought I was working this program perfectly. You know, that God was going to take away my fear, and I was going to, but you know what? I'm a self-centered alcoholic, and all those character defects would slowly crop up. I'd have spiritual experiences along the way, but then, you know, my will, my self-will would come back, and that would get me in trouble every time. And I've made a list. I've made many amends. I'm so grateful I made amends to my ex-husband. The day before he died, I could see him spiraling down. You know, he was, many times he was supposed to come out and never missed, he missed his flight or blah, blah, blah. And I said to my kids the day before he died, I said, I've got a really bad feeling about that. And that's the other thing I get when I'm working with the sponsor and praying and getting closer to God. I get spiritual intuition. And I love that because I start to see things, you know. And I said, you need to talk to your dad. I really have a bad feeling. Please, if you need to talk to dad, say anything to dad, talk to your dad. They called him that day and spoke to him. My daughter spoke to her dad and shared with her what she wanted to say, that she needed to say to him. And that was the night that he hit his head and never woke up, you know. And, oh, it's just, yeah. So I made amends to this man years ago, you know, when I did my first 4-step. Still talked about him behind his back because I was still unrecovered, making myself superior, you know. But now, you know, I'm learning more. I'm learning from this sponsor of mine. And we've been together, you know, watching kids, you know, watching grandbabies together. When we first separated or divorced, I said I wouldn't spit on him if he was on fire because I hated him that much, you know. And God had his way with me. Even though I wasn't working the steps perfectly, God came in and allowed me to be kind to him and to forgive him for the harms he caused me. And I cleaned up my act on my end on the things that I did. And I remember standing in my daughter's kitchen one day doing dishes with him. And my girls just thought that was the greatest thing, because there were years where we wouldn't talk, and I was mean. And I'm so grateful that I made that amends and to him. Yeah, I'm just continue. You know, I get to watch myself. I'm watching myself a lot more. You know, I'm picking up on it here before it comes out here now, which is pretty cool, you know, because that never really happened a lot. I kind of didn't think before I spoke. Yeah, in the 11th step. I love the 11th step, thought through prayer and meditation, to have that conscious contact with God. You know, that morning time in the morning, just sitting quietly with God. And I have a bunch of books that I'll read, if, you know. I got a little squirrel going on up there, and I can't settle my mind. And I'll read something out of one of those books and sit with God and see if something will come. Or maybe sometimes it doesn't, and I just trust, you know, the process. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you know, try to practice the principles in all my affairs. And, you know, carry the message, and that's what I hope I'm doing here tonight. I hope I'm giving you some hope. You know, hoping maybe somebody who's sitting here maybe a couple of years and under their belt, still feeling a little squirrely, you know, irritable, restless, and discontent, might want to take a look at it too, you know, like I did. It was very, you know, it was very powerful to think that, you know, after 17 years, I didn't have it all going on. But that was my truth. I didn't have it all going on. I needed more God and less Elaine. Definitely needed that. It was very evident to me that I was on my way to picking up a drink, because I was done, you know. Nothing was working. I was going to meetings and looking pretty good, huh, Sam? But inside I was dying. There was something going on in here that I wasn't aware of, and I had no idea that mental obsession was, it's not going to be with me till the day I die. And that was pretty powerful. And that spiritual malady bit, I had no idea, you know. Like I said, nice girl drank too much, but the spiritual aspect of the program, I kind of pushed under the rug, and now it's like the most important thing in my life today. And I'm so grateful that, you know, I've got the direction that I've gotten, and that I have a God that loves me today. He always loved me. I'm the one who put God on a shelf. And, you know, I'm so grateful that the steps are, after 17 years, a little bit more powerful, a little bit more understandable, a little bit more integrated into my life. I just don't read them anymore and think, I got this. They're in my life with God's help, and I'm grateful for that. And anybody who knew who coming or coming back, you know, keep coming. You know, keep coming until you hear what you need to hear, and find a sponsor, get into the steps, don't lie. Don't be dishonest like I was, you know. Don't pretend, you know. We're here to help you. So I hope I brought you a good message tonight. Thank you.